Welcome to the Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by X2 Comedy. If you're looking to get more out of your Shenandoah Valley experience, then this is the podcast for you. You'll meet interesting people, the comedians that perform here, and find out more about what you can do and see. Whether you live here or plan to visit, listen to explore what helps make up our unique slice of heaven. Now here's your host, Dawn Davis Womack.
Hello, laughers. I'm pumped to introduce you to Kevin Gibson from Virginia Momentum. Virginia Momentum is a social enterprise created by two buddies who share a bond over energizing the community for good. They create fun, active, community-focused events for people of all skill levels and backgrounds. Originated in Harrisonburg and now also extending beyond the valley, some of their popular events include Blacksburg Turkey Trot, Growler Team Relay, Rocktown Turkey Trot, Run Sweat and Beers, Run the Runway, Valley Forth Run, and Valley Vine Twilight 5K. They make people feel welcome at their events and created a sense of community around being active. Welcome to the show, Kevin. It's great to have you on today.
Dawn, thank you so much for having me. This is awesome. I'm excited to chat more with you.
I'm excited to let people know what's going on. Researching for this interview today, I had no idea how big Virginia Momentum has gotten, and I can't wait to share it with everyone today. This is so good.
Yeah, it's exciting for me to get to kind of share the story of it, especially after such a crazy year. So I'm excited for the conversation and for your questions.
Yes, yes. Well, let's begin with that story, shall we? You are not a one-man show behind Virginia Momentum. Can you tell the laughers how and where you met your business partner, the story of Virginia Momentum, and what your team looks like today?
Yeah, so my business partner's name is Alan Maynard. We met at JMU, actually, but not while we were there as students, even though we both did go to James Madison for school. We met while we were working there. Actually, I hired Alan. I was an assistant director, I think, at the time in the alumni relations office, and we needed a new coordinator of our volunteer training program. And so met Alan first, probably in about 2009 when we hired him to work there. And so him and I became good friends because we traveled around the country to meet with JMU alumni to try to help keep them engaged, to recruit them to be volunteers, invite them back to campus. And we just became really good friends through that. And then one of the things that we did was we would, when we were, you know, local or in Harrisonburg, we would go to the rec center at JMU at our lunch break and just try to get a workout in. It was a good break from the day. And we were kind of accountability buddies in that regard. And we had this like realization somewhere along the lines that we both shared this common background of being really sort of unhealthy kids and not super active. And we didn't really feel welcomed at sort of, you know, exercise events or even sometimes sports, you know, throughout growing up. And so we kind of realized we had this shared background of intimidation around exercising. And we had happened to sort of be like trying to get our lives a little bit more focused on physical activity. We signed up for this race, this 10K race in Richmond, Virginia. We went to it, we participated in it. It had really good community vibes. It was welcoming of a lot of different people. And on our drive back, we were like, Harrisonburg needs something like that. And so we kind of, while we were still working full time, developed this idea to create an event. We started to meet with some people in Harrisonburg where, and the idea was, let's do a really friendly 5K event on July 4th and we'll take in some money and then we'll give all the money back to charities. Cause again, we had full-time jobs at the time. And so ultimately, I guess sort of to make a long story short, from there on, that first year we hosted an event was 2012. The community response was really positive. We sort of were like, wow, we liked doing this a lot. And so then we just kind of continued to add things on every year. And actually that first year, it wasn't even a thing. I mean, VA Momentum wasn't a thing. We almost like, we ran it out of like a joint bank account. It was like unintentionally sort of sketchy almost because we just took in money. We just took in money into a bank account and then we just like gave it back out. But right. So we realized we needed to create kind of a legal structure behind it between year one and year two. And so anyway, we did that. And then Can talk more as you want about the sort of transition from full-time work, doing this as a side thing to, you know, it becoming then our full-time gigs a few years later.
I was going to ask you the timeline on that. Was that a hard transition for you all? I mean, how much planning went into that? Was it, you know, we're just going to do this in 6 months and we're out of our jobs, or let's just quit today and then we'll figure it out. What did that look like?
Yeah, that's a great question. We get that people ask us that a lot, or people ask us about sort of our business plan and things like that. And we sort of laugh internally because, like, we didn't know what the heck we were doing. I mean, we didn't set out to create a business. I mean, one of the hardest decisions early on for us was, should we be a nonprofit or not? And so in the early days, we were like, you know, we don't really want to be a nonprofit, because our goal wasn't to, like, create a board of directors and sort of need to follow 501c3 protocols. We just were like two guys who wanted to do some good and encourage people to be active. And really the easiest, most efficient way to do that was to get on LegalZoom.com and create an LLC. Like, that was the easiest way to do it. And so we did a lot of research as the years went on about, like, sort of for-profit versus nonprofit models. And this idea of sort of social enterprise was the thing that we latched onto, which is really using sort of a for-profit model to maximize community impact. And so we always really made sure that everything we did was run through that filter of, like, are we maximizing the positive benefit back to the community? But to get back to your direct question, it was 2015. So our first event was in 2012. 2015 was when I went full time, and then Alan came on full time in 2016. And so it was really 3 years between then. And the sort of what happened during that time was that the hobby sort of spiraled out of control. It was either going to become something where we needed to devote more time to, or we needed to dial back on, because it was starting to take too much time almost at that point to be a hobby. And so not an easy sort of leap of faith or whatever, but it did. We did have the advantage of growing it over those three years. So we had an idea of how to create sort of projections for the future and whether we could support, you know, a salary. And the way it worked was ultimately that at the end of every event, we took the pie and we said, here's the portion we can afford to give back to local nonprofits, and then here's the portion we can afford to put into our salaries so that we can keep doing this. I mean, we knew we never were going to get rich off of this, and that wasn't the idea. In fact, both of us still make less money now than we did when we worked at JMU, and that's 10 years later. So it was more that this was the thing that, like, gave us the entrepreneurial freedom that we really wanted and realized through building this.
Then I can imagine rewarding benefits as well that are priceless from doing what you're doing.
Yeah. I mean, this is like what we wake up every day really excited to do. And we are really motivated by this idea that, like, your success is directly related to how hard or not you work. And so, you know, if we slack off, then, like, we're the only ones really that will feel the brunt of that. I mean, obviously it would mean we didn't do events or whatever, so the community might also, but in terms of, like, financially, it's like, it has those two, or I mean, it has many sort of, like, secret sauce things to it, but it allows the economic engine to be driven by way of sort of our financial model with the events. But then the passion piece is ultimately what's most important, that we get to do something that we really love.
Which I imagine the passion piece also fuels the work ethic, though.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Because when you're more passionate.
I mean, and I'm assuming similar for you in your world now, doing exactly what you love to do when you're, you know, when people talk a lot about in the world, like, you know, work-life balance or whatever. And we always talk about work-life integration, because, like, what we are, because we're fortunate to do what we love, it's more of an integration, because I don't think of work as separate from my other things in my life. Like, this is a part of my family. This is a part of, you know, when I'm answering emails late or taking phone calls late or, you know, losing sleep over things or whatever, you know, it's an integration more than it is a sort of like, oh, I need to really figure out how I can strike a balance and turn one off and turn one on. It's not so much like that.
I like how you said that, because I view the work I do. I love making people laugh and creating events that make people laugh. And I feel like it's just an extension of who I am. And that's exactly what I feel like you're saying is an extension of what you and your partner are all about. So that's a pretty, speaking of that, it's really now beyond you and your partner. I noticed that you offer internships, and I know that both your wives are very supportive and involved. So what does your team look like today? It was just you two to start. What's it look like now?
Yeah. So we have been very fortunate over the years to present in, we've been invited to present in a lot of classes at JMU, specifically within their kinesiology department. And so we've had a steady flow of interns from JMU, which has been absolutely critical to us, and have had some of those people who stay on long-term, whether it be as part-time employees or just as volunteers. We have a couple of other part-time folks that do help us out on the social media front with some of our creative stuff there. And then also kind of on the design side, we hire some folks to help us with some of our logos or designing t-shirts or different things like that. Me and Alan are still the only full-time people. We at one point had hired another full-time person and ultimately just wasn't a good fit in the end. And we actually learned a lot through that about sort of what we were ready for and what we weren't ready for. And back to the sort of passion piece, it's kind of interesting. That was one of our biggest kind of growing pains times, I think, because we realized how hard it was to involve someone else in such a like high risk financial component of the business, meaning when that piece about sort of how hard you're working being a direct result to sort of like whether or not you pay your bills, it was really hard to sort of like have someone else involved that, you know, you were analyzing, is this directly correlating to us making more money to be able to support more salaries? And ultimately, I think it was on us that we messed up. I don't think we were ready to hire a full-time person and manage that part of the situation. So anyway, I think when you ask that question about what the makeup of the team is, I think there was a time where we thought we would have maybe a lot more full-time staff, but we've struggled with sort of how to make that work, and part-time has worked out well for us so far to fill kind of the needs that we have at this point. And by the way, we're still great relationship with the person who we hired, who it didn't work out. And she took the high road of all high roads that I've ever experienced and was really gracious towards us, but it just wasn't a high point of our past.
Well, yeah, but you learned a lot from it and grew from it. And that's all we can really ask for in life. It's this, you know, it's a human suffering experience to be here. It comes with its highs and its lows naturally. And when the lows come, if we can walk away with some great lessons and be better for it, then it's served its purpose and we all are better for it.
I like your Freudian slip there of adding humor in there, though. That was like that was actually probably most important in the end.
Exactly. Most important in the end. Yeah, this is really exciting what you guys are doing. Your mission is the energizing of the community for good. And one of the ways you do that, a fun way you do that, is providing value adds for the race participants. Some fun ones are the pumpkin pie station along the turkey trot course and the inflatable slip and slide at the Valley Forth run. Okay, who is the brainchild or brain children behind coming up with these fabulous ideas? I mean, what have been some of your favorites?
Yeah, so it's interesting because that's the piece that we've always talked about is like what makes us, when we think about ourselves, we think part of sort of the the secret sauce is that we look at all of our events and we say, anybody could do this, right? Like anybody can plan 5Ks. It's not, and a lot of people do. It's not necessarily rocket science. And a lot of people reach out to us and they want to partner with us to create a new 5K or something like that. And one of the things we've always said that makes us feel a little different is that we try to really filter everything through this lens of like, what's that extra value add piece? So I'm so thankful that you asked. And I have to give credit to Alan for being sort of the behind the scenes guy on our team, the budget guy. He's really sharp and logical and level headed. And what makes us work is that I'm not super sharp. And so to answer your question about who comes up with those ideas, yeah. Like I'm the dreamer of the group. I'm the one who kind of says, hey, what if we, and you asked about a personal favorite, you know, we pardon a live turkey at our turkey trot in Harrisonburg. And this was just an idea that I had. So the mayor comes and we bring a live turkey into the middle of the city at this event. Not even sure if that's legal or not. Like legitimately not sure if it's legal still.
I think they say ask for permission later or something like that.
That's our second mission statement is asking for forgiveness. But
that's it.
But those are the kind of things that like, I'll have some idea like that and be like, you know, it'd be really cool. And I bet kids would get a kick out of on Thanksgiving morning would be seeing like the mayor pardon a live turkey. Or, you know, we're going to have a water station at the turkey trot, but we should give out little pieces of pumpkin pie also. Like who doesn't want a little piece of pumpkin pie? And so,
it's Thanksgiving. I mean, come on.
So we have Alan and I have a great relationship of kind of being, I'll pitch these ideas and then he'll kind of ask good questions about them and ask, you know, how feasible they might be. But, you know, that turkey pardoning thing is such a funny thing because the first year we did it, it was like, we came up with the idea and we started advertising it before we had any clue how we were actually going to make it happen. It was like, oh, it's a cool idea. We'll make it happen. Like we can do anything we put our minds to. Came like a few weeks before the turkey trot. We didn't know where we were getting a turkey from. We didn't know how I don't know how turkeys behave. Like I don't come from a farm background. I grew up in Virginia Beach. Like I'm a city kid. Anyway, we ended up buying a turkey on Craigslist and
for real.
That's yeah. We drove out to this person's house and they had, because like our thinking, so this is like, you know, back to me saying I'm not sharp. Like my thinking was like, we live in the turkey capital of the East Coast. Like we can get a turkey anytime we want. Well, turns out there's like rules and regulations around like, you know, the big places we see around here, they don't really actually own those turkeys. Those turkeys are owned by larger, you know, organizations who they're going to sell them back to once they grow, blah, blah, blah. So like, it's not as easy to get a turkey as you would think. And so anyway, we bought this turkey on Craigslist. We went out, this guy just had like three or four of them. They were all destined for being on someone's plate on Thanksgiving. Like, you know, that was part of the deal. And, we're like, can we buy it? Cause we're going to pardon it. Like we're gonna pardon it. Then you have to fast forward and think like, are we being honest about that? Like, are we actually pardoning this turkey? Like, or are we just going to like, then find like, what are we going to do with it afterwards? Like, I can't hang on to it at my house. Like, you know? And so
what did happen to it?
So that year was the first year we ended up, there's a lavender farm near here. And we got somehow linked up with the people who own the lavender farm. And they had a turkey there that had been pardoned from the White House.
Oh, my gosh.
And so we said, how about this? We'll do you even better. We will get you another pardoned turkey, pardoned by the mayor of Harrisonburg. And so that turkey went and lived the rest of their life at a lavender farm here in town. So we legitimately did pardon that one. But anyway, that was now we just do like a borrow system. So we realize now we don't need to buy it. We just need to find somebody who we can borrow it from for like, you know, a few hours.
A few hours and pick it up and send it back.
I mean, so that's the thing is like, it's still such a, like, you think about businesses telling these stories about like crazy things that they do. And like, yeah. You know, like how people think on the, it's like the whole, like the duck analogy, right? Like right. It looks so peaceful on top of the water, but under the water, it's like, you know,
yes,
just working so hard. So like, we literally go pick these turkeys up, like in a dog crate, and we like, transport them in our car. I mean, it's totally like, it's totally a like by the bootstraps, like, you know, make it happen. Like you just have to, how do we do it?
Do you have a discussion on whose car you're going to take this time? If it's going to be Alan's or is it going to be yours?
Yeah. Well, interestingly enough, yes. And thankfully both of our cars, like because of working events, we, you know, yeah. Stuff is going in and out of our cars all the time. So our cars like have become company cars and they're not in, we're not worried about them being in amazing shape or anything. So hauling the turkeys is just like another thing. We, our Smoothie Man's Mud Mile event that we do for kids, like, you know, we'll fill our car with hay bales and all this other stuff. So it's not too much struggle on the cars at this point.
Okay. Yeah. Nothing is out of reach for you guys. Does Alan ever sit there when you come up with these ideas and just go, no, no, no.
You know, he's much more like tactful, like than okay. that. And so like what he'll do is he'll ask questions that ultimately make me come to that conclusion on my own. So like, it's like, but I'll sometimes have these moments where I'm like really frustrated. Cause I'm like, I know you're asking me questions to try to convince me that this is not a good idea. Like, don't give me, you know, like you're, It's basically like being married. I mean, like business partnerships, like especially like 50-50 business partnerships like ours, like it's as close as it gets to marriage because of all like communication is key, obviously, but all these little idiosyncrasies. Yeah. Like it, if I can tell he's asking me questions that are like to try to convince me that an idea is a bad one, I'm like, I just start getting frustrated and defensive about it.
Do you have to take a time out from each other?
Pretty much. Yeah, pretty much.
That's exciting. Well, it sounds like despite that, you guys are having a ton of fun. That's for sure. Yeah.
I mean, that's the whole, this whole thing, you know, was built on us. I mean, like you said at the beginning, you know, we were just two buddies who kind of had this shared bond, but then like had a really fun time doing this. And we make a lot of decisions at happy hour and we sort of try not to take ourselves too seriously. And like, you know, when we start going down that road is when I think we get a little off track. So we try to make sure it's fun all the time.
Yeah. I like that. I also like the part of your story where you were talking about how you all weren't really like sport, like big time athletes or any of that. So you wanted to create something where it could appeal to all levels. And I noticed that on your website, a lot of the events encourage participation of the all level of runners, like Run, Sweat, and Beers. It even like lays out runners do mile, you know, 1 mile, 3 mile, 5 mile options. But you do welcome walkers at any of your events. Is that correct? Or what can you
yeah.
say about that?
Yeah. So you're exactly right that essentially like we want everyone to be able to look at a description of one of our events or at our website and look at it and say, you know what, I could do that. Like, even if I didn't think that might be something that I would be interested in or that was created for me, we want people to think to themselves, yeah, I do have a place there. I could go check it out. And so that has everything to do from like the design of, or like language that we use on our website. We try to be communicative of that, but then like we also at the events can design things in a way that I think help people feel like it's a social environment just as much as it's a competitive running environment, or it's a sort of all skill levels get cheered on the same way when they cross the finish line. You know, like we do, obviously we do give out awards for first place, you know, finishers and those kinds of things. And so we want to support obviously the competitive folks. That's a key component of our sort of industry, for lack of a better term also. But like we are there high-fiving and like probably almost to a fault. And we have taken heat for this before from, I think, maybe the more competitive running crowd, and it's understandable, but we've taken heat for maybe not being focused enough on the competitive side and the more intense runners, because we do try to create this environment that celebrates everyone kind of in the same way. And that is exactly, you're right. That's exactly because me and Alan didn't think this stuff was for us when we were growing up. And so if you had asked me, would I participate in a turkey trot growing up? The answer, I never did growing up. And I probably wouldn't have looked at it and said, you know, that's for me. And so we want it to be like, man, these guys just are about building community, having fun, you know, being welcoming and encouraging of healthy activity. And in the end, our mission statement, energizing communities for good, the idea of that word good, like, has double meaning to us. One is that we always have given back to nonprofits, like I said before, and over the years, we've given over $123,000 to local nonprofits, which is awesome. We wanted to be able to give back more than we could personally. And so, like, there was no way Al and I in the last 10 years would have given $123,000 on our own. But then the other meaning of that word good is that, like, we also want people, like you're saying, if you come to an event and you walk that event the first time, you certainly can come back and walk again the next time. But maybe at that event, you'll realize, you know what? Like, I might be interested in running this one next time, or maybe I'll do 1 mile this time, but I'll try out the 3 mile or next time. Because again, that's how for us, it was incremental sort of growth in terms of our own journey with running or exercise in general. And so we that word good, we hope means like for good, as in like the long haul, like that you'll always look at our calendar and say, hey, there's something for me there. And maybe I'll set a goal to do the next, you know, the next distance the next time, or push myself the next step further.
I love how you guys are creating really encouraging and supportive environment for people just to get active and set goals to get more fit, really, by doing something super fun among a whole group of people. I think that's beautiful. I really like it.
Thanks. Yeah. I mean, we're so lucky. Like I said, the idea that at the beginning, one of the reasons between 2012 and 2015, we had gotten to the point where we could think about doing this as a full-time job was because the community response was so positive. And so people responded and were like, hey, you should keep doing more. And then event numbers grew. We went from, you know, the turkey trot, the largest one we had was 1900 participants, I think, in Harrisonburg on Thanksgiving morning. You know, that one started at probably 750 or something like that, you know? And so because the community responded so positively is fueled our sort of interest and ability to do this.
Yeah. You really do have some very cool events. I'm familiar and have done the Rocktown Turkey Trot. And I'd like to ask you about some other events I'm not so familiar with that look super fun and interesting, like Growler Team Relay. What's that? Talk to me, Kevin.
So that event was created with the idea that, it was created because Alan and I and some friends were considering doing another event that was a long distance relay run. It was like a 24 to 48 hour thing where you run in the middle of the night, you sleep in a van, you know, it has all these sort of intense components about running a long distance over a long period of time. We had like talked about it with some friends and we were like, you know, that sounds really fun. But like at the time we all had young kids and, you know, we were like, you know, sleeping in a van, like, doesn't sound that appealing. I already like don't sleep well enough already, like with my young kids, you know, running in the dark. We were kind of like, yeah, I mean, like, that's cool. It's kind of like a badge of honor that you did that, but like, man, I don't need to prove anything on that regard or whatever. Yeah. And so we I had partnered with breweries for Run Sweat Beers, as you mentioned. And so we kind of knew that there was this great marriage between the craft beer community and the running community. And this was all sort of, both of them were kind of growing together at the same time. This is in kind of the 2016, 2017, 2018 timeframe. And so anyway, we dreamed up the idea of the Growler Team Relay, which is sort of a spinoff of that other event that I mentioned to you before that we were considering doing with friends, but happens basically all during daylight. So morning until afternoon, it's a long distance relay run. So anywhere between 40 miles and 70 miles and starts at a brewery in the morning, runs to another brewery as like a halfway point turnaround that maybe is, you know, let's just call it 20 miles away, and then runs back to the starting point brewery for the finish line. And there are preset legs throughout the day where participants, you know, run and hand off the baton at each one of these preset transition points. So it's a little more like intense than some of our more local community oriented turkey trots and Valley Forge runs and stuff like that, but has this same sort of edge to it that a lot of our events do, where we, you know, instead of a relay baton, like a regular relay baton, they pass along like a key, an actual like key on a carabiner. And then at the finish line, they test their key on a lockbox. And if it opens up the box, they win like the secret prize. At all of the, at all the relay exchange points, we have them play different games where they can earn like extra beer tickets at the finish line. So stuff like, you know, move the cookie from your forehead to your mouth without using your hands or whatever. And so there's these components of more, it's again, designed to be like social and welcoming for lots of different groups. That one is probably our only event where we don't end up with many runners, and that's only, or many walkers, because there's a sort of a time limit to the day with that one because of the distance. But we do get the feedback from a lot of folks that they're like, it's not timed in and of itself. So it's not necessarily a competition in the way that some other longer distance relays might be. And we do get that feedback a lot that people are like, this one is, we love this one because we love the Growler Relay because it's a little more casual. And so that's a long answer to your question, but it's, and we've done them as we do them as far south as St. Petersburg, Florida and Orlando. We do them in North Carolina, a bunch throughout Virginia, Richmond, Virginia Beach, Northern Virginia. And then we've gone up to Philadelphia and Pittsburgh and Columbus, Ohio. And so that one has kind of allowed us to expand our sort of our reach a little bit, which has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm intrigued by that also. So do you reach out to specific breweries to start setting these things up in Orlando and all these other cities? Can you kind of walk through the process of how you establish contact and work with people to make that happen?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's very, so the brewery world is pretty tight knit in the end, even though there now are tons and tons of breweries, there's a lot of connections between them. And so one of the things we've learned throughout the years is we'll go to one brewery and then they'll say, hey, have you ever talked to these folks? They might be interested in doing something like this. A lot of our starting point is based on finding routes that are safe and good for the relay. So we've kind of dialed in on these communities that have really good trail systems. And so
I see.
You know, a lot of the places we go, we'll research, okay, what's the trail system look like? And then are there breweries along the trail system? And then probably 60% of the time, a cold call to a brewery where you say, hey, we organize running events up and down the East Coast, and we'd love to partner with your brewery to bring a bunch of runners there. And, you know, usually we get a response from that, and the partnerships are really strong. We'll then usually go visit the brewery, check out the running route, maybe meet with their run club. A lot of breweries have running clubs, you know, and so we start to kind of build the audience of people kind of through the two networks, the brewery network and then the running community network. And then it's been really fun to kind of see those grow. And it's interesting, we're getting ready to enter into like, what is phase two of that going to look like of the Growler Relay? Because obviously the pandemic changed a lot of things and we lost a little bit of steam from that. But then also, you know, that we kind of were riding this wave of like the brewery and the running. There weren't a lot, not all breweries had run clubs like back when we started this. And so we might even be like at the front end of that with some of these places. And then we could help them maybe even build a run club at their brewery or whatever. But long story short is like, it's not, there's a lot more brew runs now or these kinds of things than there were when we started. So we kind of have to maintain, you know, what's going to be our competitive edge on that. And we're sort of trying to figure out what that is right now.
Yeah, I do. And I'm sure you will. You guys are super creative in coming up with these partnerships with various businesses. Like for the instance, the runway event at the Shenandoah Valley Regional Airport. And I see that all the proceeds are going to benefit the Explore More Discovery Museum. Is this the first year you've done this kind of event? And can you tell the laughers more about it? And how exactly are the proceeds going to assist the museum to benefit our youth?
Yeah, I think this is the second or the third year that it's all kind of confusing because of 2020, but it's been going on for a couple of years. And actually I'm glad you asked about this one because this one's kind of a unique partnership. So this event is actually born out of the Children's Museum. So they came up with the concept. They have the partnership with the airport. And then they reached out to us and said, hey, there's some components of this that we don't really know very well. Would you all want to help us with this? And so we have sort of a partnership with them where we're actually contracted by them to help with certain components of the event and then also serve as consultants when things come up that are very sort of race specific that we may be able to help with super efficiently that might take them a long time. And so it's really fun because we all get to kind of do what we're good at. They work with sponsors to raise money for the museum, whereas we do the timing chips and, you know, do the official timing for the event, or we set up our start finish arch on the runway and things like that. And so it's a great symbiotic relationship where we get a chance to kind of stay in our lane a little bit with what we're good at. They get to do really what they're good at. And then when they need help on some specific things, we get to provide feedback and help them with that. And interestingly enough, I mean, this event was supposed to be in person in March of 2020. And this was one of the first like conversations we had. And I don't think they or us will ever forget. I mean, the day that we were discussing, like, is the pandemic and coronavirus like really going to be a thing that's going to impact us and all this stuff. We were on a conference call with them when a bunch of these decisions kind of came down about things being closed and people not being able to gather in groups and all of these things. And so it ended up moving to a virtual format, but we were able to really help them, you know, with that because of this good relationship. And so, as you said, all of the proceeds benefit them. They use that to continue to build the Children's Museum, and they're all about play for kids. And so they put it all towards that. And then, you know, they hire us out of their own budget for, you know, their annual budget, which, so it just works nicely that we can help them, but they can still say, none of the race fees are going to VA Momentum. It's that the Children's Museum has said it's a priority to do this event. And so we're going to set aside a little bit of money so that we can do it professionally. And we're doing it professionally by hiring VA Momentum. And so it'd be the same as if they were going to host a fundraiser concert and they needed sound, you know, they wouldn't do the sound on their own. They would hire a company to do the sound. And so that's sort of the role that we play.
I like how that's working out. Everybody's winning out of that one in terms of creating greater good. Just, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And we're fortunate that we do that in a couple of our different events. And I know we talked a little bit about the website earlier and we're kind of in a transition phase of transitioning out of some virtual stuff more to the in-person stuff, but we're fortunate that we work with a couple of different organizations in situations like that. We work with Generations Crossing, another nonprofit in town for a New Year's Eve glow run event. We work with Fraser Quarry to host an event at the quarry where it's a similar thing where they've said, we want to do the event, but we want you guys to organize the run part so that all of the proceeds can benefit a nonprofit. And so it's been kind of fun over the years to build those relationships so that not every single one of our events is like us coming up with it and then doing everything and then giving money out of the pot to the charity. Sometimes it's different where somebody says, we want to hire you for this amount so that then all of the race proceeds can benefit the nonprofit. And so both of those sort of styles work and they kind of diversify our portfolio.
Yeah, I think that's great. You really do really have these great events. There's another one I want to talk about, and that is the Valley Vines Twilight 5K. My wine lover self is particularly fond of this idea. So is this an annual event? Is it at the same winery? What can you share with us about this event?
Yeah, thanks for asking. It is an annual event. We do it at the same winery every year. It's at Cross Keys Vineyard. And essentially what we were looking for was a way to diversify. When we realized sort of the brewery running thing was working, we then were like, well, wineries seem like they would also be a good fit. And again, this is kind of like, if you rewind back, this is before, you know, this was happening at a lot of places. And so now you hear more about winery events or brewery running events or these kinds of things. But anyway, we approached Cross Keys about this. We were working at the time with the local chamber of commerce, somebody who was on the chamber board, participated in a bunch of our events, and said, hey, you know, why don't we help you connect with the vineyard? And so we went out and designed a course there. And I mean, it's awesome. This one is by far our most beautiful post-race celebration, or like our post-race party. We do the event is at sunset. So that's where that twilight piece comes in, on a Friday night. So it's different. Most runs are on Saturday morning or those kinds of things. But this is on Friday night at sunset. The route weaves through the vines. We actually provide, if people want to, there's an app that people can use to listen while they're running that tells them what kinds of wine are made out of the grapes that they're running through. Cool. During the run. Yeah. So that's kind of fun. One year we actually tried a wine stop on the route where you could like stop and have a little taste of wine.
Yeah. How'd that go?
It was good. The feedback was a little bit mixed. It was kind of like, you know, once I start having some wine, I don't really want to start running again. You know, like
stuck at the start line with the wine.
Exactly. But no, it's awesome. It's a great event. The award winners get like a glass of wine in a wine, or not a glass of wine, a bottle of wine in a wine koozie. Okay. So like that's kind of cool. So it's obviously wine themed. You have music at the finish line. But again, it weaves through the vines, and then it's on that back sort of grassy area at Cross Keys Vineyard. It couldn't be more beautiful.
Yeah. It's a beautiful venue. We've done some comedy shows out there. We really love it. More importantly though, do you get a glass of wine when you sign up for this race?
Yeah.
I'm asking for a friend.
I left that out. Yes. Everybody, your first glass of wine is on us as part of your entry. You get a t-shirt. We do chip time that one also. So you get an official time if you're interested in time. And so, yeah, I mean, it's kind of the like perfect. And then obviously you can buy more glasses of wine after that. But yeah, first glass of wine is on us as part of your entry.
Okay, cool. Now here's the next question. This is an event I haven't done yet, mainly because it looks a bit intimidating, if I may be honest. But perhaps this convo might change my mind. I'm not promising anything, Kevin. But it's the annual Pound the Peak event at Massanutten Resort. It's certainly not Mount Everest, but it's a 2.1-mile uphill walk-run adventure, which is not nothing. So how do you get the people off the mountain? And what would you say to someone who has never done it before that would encourage them to give it a try?
I'll start with the ride down, the how you get down. So
okay.
Ski lifts are how you get down, actually. So the ski lifts operate during the event to bring participants back down after you finish. So it's actually, I mean, some people are like, I kind of just wanted to do that, you know, I just wanted to ride down the mountain. because it is super, I mean, it's beautiful. That ride down is awesome on the way down from the peak. But so to answer your question, it's interesting because this event actually has the reputation for being one of the events where people who are just like you're describing yourself, who consider doing it and then sign up, that they do it and they are like, I am so glad that I did this. And it was way more sort of motivating, encouraging, and supportive of an event and an environment than I thought that it was going to be. And so we actually had, sorry, that's my calendar.
Okay,
sorry about that.
I'm glad you heard it too.
Yeah.
Don't worry about myself. Okay, go ahead.
About the alarms were going off on the on the thing to say we're over. Kevin is talking too much. We're over our time.
Okay.
The first year we did that event, actually, we had somebody write an extensive blog post on it. She and her partner were the last one to finish. To get to the peak. And as I mentioned to you before, we were still set up at the top. Everyone was there cheering, and it was an amazing experience for her that made her say, you know what? Like, I think I want to try to make healthy activity more of a priority in my life. And so it's certainly hard. Don't get me wrong. It's tough to get 2.1 miles pretty much straight uphill, but it's also, we encourage people, they can treat it like a hike if they want to. If they want to hike it, then that's great, and treat it like going on a you know, more intense hike than what they might usually do. But to answer your question about sort of the, how does this fit within our mission, so I think a typical race management company may look at that and say, like, so let's race people from the bottom to the top. That's it. It's a tall race, or it's a tall mountain. It's a lot of climb. Let's just send them from the bottom to the top so you can get there first. Well, we decided, let's make it a partner event. That way it kind of has this component of like team building to it. So it can be fun in that regard. And then second, along the 2 mile course, there's these two places you stop and complete more of a mental challenge before you can move on the course. And if you don't complete it or you get it wrong, you ultimately kind of end up in like the penalty box for a few minutes before you're allowed to move on. And so, yeah, every team gets like a timer at the start line. And so when they arrive at the first station, you know, the first challenge station, they set their timer to 10 minutes. And basically, if they don't get it correct, or if they, you know, max out on time, they have to wait till their timer goes off before they're allowed to move on. And so the idea with this is that it's a leveling of the playing field a little bit between sort of, you could be the fastest person on the course, and this happens every year. You and your partner could be the fastest on the course, but if you get both of the challenges wrong, you're automatically 20 minutes penalized, and somebody is going to pass you, even if they're, you know, because there's two challenge stations, each one maximum of 10 minutes. So like, it's amazing how it plays out. It means that when we're at the peak, you know, it's always an amazing, it's probably one of our favorite top five or three moments of the year, is that when Alan and I are set up at the top, you know, we kind of can't see who's going to be coming up first necessarily. And so it's always this moment of like, who's it going to be this year that wins Pound the Peak? Because it's someone, we've never had repeat champions, and it's always someone different. And it's a different makeup of team. We've had all male teams. We've had all female teams. We've had co-ed teams. I mean, it's awesome because of that leveling of the playing field piece. And so it's certainly a difficult event in terms of it's strenuous, but we encourage people to come try it out regardless, and knowing that it's going to be strenuous, but at the same time, knowing that it's not just a race for the fastest person. It's more like the show Amazing Race or something like that, where you get a chance to do something different along the way that might give you an advantage. And so we give the people who get the challenges wrong a hard time, you know, because a lot of times it's the fastest teams who struggle the most on the challenges. And so then it's just funny because they know what they're getting themselves into, but then when they struggle there, we're like, man, yep, exactly.
Yeah. Do you have to be on a team, and how big are the teams?
Yeah. So it's just, that's a great question. That event is just a partner event. So it's just, okay. You do have to be on a team of two. Last year during the pandemic was the only year we did it as an individual event. And that was because we wanted to make sure there was proper distancing between people. But we've gotten the feedback, even just like anecdotally from that, that what people love about it is that it's a partner event. So just two people on a team.
Okay. That's doable. I like that. Yeah. You guys have really created something special here that keeps evolving with the times to support communities, like your Fast Forward series that was birthed in August 2020 amidst the COVID-19 pandemic. What did it look like then? And what does it look like now?
This is a good question and probably the hardest one to answer, I think. I'll try to be brief. The Forward series was created when we realized that during the pandemic, people were still yearning to be a part of something. And so we were pretty worried at the beginning of the pandemic that this whole dream might be over, because our business is built on bringing people together in person in as large a groups as possible. You know, like we're based on having a lot of people, operating at, 50% or 20% capacity or whatever doesn't work. Or 0%, we were in 0% world for a while where we weren't able to do anything. But we realized, actually, it was when that first event we did ever in 2012 was the Valley Forth run on July 4th. And so you mentioned we started the Forward series in August of 2020. In July of 2020, we were like, how are we going to salvage sort of our annual, one of our largest events of the year? And we came up with this idea to do a virtual run across America and back, where as we compiled mileage from participants, so if you signed up throughout the weekend, you could add, hey, today I ran 3 miles, next day you run 3 more, and your total miles goes into the pot. And it was going to take 6,136 miles to get across America and back. And along the way, as we virtually reached certain cities, we unlocked these surprises throughout the day. And so, we had some celebrities record videos to encourage us. We had some people take pictures with a flag that we sent them of the event in different cities. And there's all kinds of really cool stuff. And the engagement was almost nothing we had ever experienced before in this July of 2020 event. And that was really the encouragement then that people really wanted to be a part of something. And they actually were counting on us to still create that for them. And so we came up with this idea of a monthly, and we called it the Forward series. It was a monthly program where we sort of guaranteed there were always going to be these three components. We're going to do this prize wheel run where everybody's name would go into a hat and somebody would spin the prize wheel for a really cool prize. We would do a main event. So something that looked more similar to a larger scale event, but again, everybody would do it on their own. And then these video challenges where we would put out things this week, on your run, think about somebody you want to give a compliment to, and then text them when you get back from the run. Stuff that was a little more well-being related almost. And so, sorry, I said I was going to give you a short answer and you got the long answer.
I'm loving it.
So Basically we created it. The idea was we'll do it for 6 months during the pandemic, thinking August to whatever that would be, whatever 6 months was from that, January or something. We'd be pandemic's going to be over, right? This is going to be over. And we had people subscribe. And so it was a monthly thing. You pay a monthly subscription to be a part of it. We had 500 people sign up to do this monthly virtual series. And it was proof to us that people wanted to be a part of something. And so we ended up extending it after that another 6 months. So it ultimately went a total of 12 months. We ended it in, we ended it in maybe July of this year, I think was the last one we did, because we were starting to phase back in-person events. And the virtual series was sort of created to be a virtual series and didn't so much work as well as an in-person series. So long story short, we did it for 12 months. It was incredible. And it was something that made us feel like we had a purpose. I always told people, thank you so much for participating in this, because you don't realize, like, you're saying thank you to me for encouraging you to like continue to be active during the pandemic. But what I'm saying to you is like, thank you for giving us a purpose, like, because we otherwise didn't know what we were going to do. And so it was incredible. And I think now, to answer your question about kind of how we're now, we're still really trying to figure things out, like what things look like moving forward. It's obviously still a gray area. And by the time this goes, or airs, who knows, maybe things will be different another way. And that's what's really hard right now, is we don't really, I think for a while there, we knew how to solve for X because we knew what X looked like. You know, we knew, okay, no one's doing anything, so we have to solve for X, which is like, how do we keep people engaged during this? Now what X is such a moving target, like, and numbers in person aren't quite back to what they were. So that means that events financially are down, and, you know, it's so we're really, actually, I told somebody the other day, I think we're having a harder time now than we had during the middle. If you want to like think about whatever the middle of the pandemic was, like, we're struggling more now than we were then, because, it's so hard to project how things are going to go. And so that's just sort of the fact of the matter on that.
Yeah. Sounding alarms right there. I know. Yeah. It's the same thing with the comedy events. Not quite sure what the winter is going to look like. You know, the podcast will certainly be here, and we're thinking through all of those kinds of things ourselves, but we are resilient people. And at some point we're going to need to kind of learn how to live with this thing, I think. So,
I think you're right.
Yeah, I do. Just go ahead.
No, sorry to interrupt. I just was going to say, I think that, it's interesting, because I think that there was a thought at one point that like things, you know, floodgates were going to like open back up, and we were going to be like roaring 20s style, and like people are going to be coming out in waves, and like it's going to be amazing. And there was like a tiny taste of that almost. Sorry, I'm
he's in downtown Harrisonburg, people, if you're wondering. He's in the this office building called the Perch, which is kind of a co-op of people that come from different businesses and kind of share office space. Isn't that right? And it's above Magpie, I think.
Is that, you nailed correct? It.
Yeah. There you go. So that's what you're hearing. And we're on a Zoom call, but yes, please continue, Kevin.
No, that's okay. I just think back to that idea that at one point, I think we thought it might be like, oh, floodgates are going to open. And the reality is that it's not that. We're just like in another phase of the pandemic, yeah. You know, like, and it's there's no finality to it at this point.
No, not at this point, though. I'm really encouraged and believe in you guys. I mean, if you're, you know, what you were able to do with the virtual version of the Valley Forth, I mean, you said you weren't sharp, but all I've heard is sharpness this whole entire interview. I'm just saying. It just means this is creating another opportunity to stretch those creative muscles in your old noggin that seem to be working just fine, my friend.
I appreciate that. Like I said, we are only here because people in the community like you kind of continue to lift us up. And I think that's kind of how this all works. The rising tide raises all ships, but the more we can, as you just sort of showed, the more we can encourage people to stay on the path and keep working hard and keep focusing on the positive. Like that's what's going to continue to allow us all to thrive.
Yeah. Maybe us, you know, I'm in a similar boat. I know maybe we should get together and talk about what comedy and fitness might look like in this next stage. I mean, who knows?
I have never said no to a conversation about something creative like that.
Yeah, I think we should think about that. Now that laughers are going to be real curious what comes out of that.
So yeah. Stand by.
Stand by. And speaking of the future, what's in the future? I know we're talking a little bit about that. Are there any events in 2022? Let's say we can merge out of this pandemic. Or what's on the table as possibilities moving into the future?
Yeah, to be honest, we are right now like so hyper focused on just continuing to get our footing after all of this and keep our heads above water. And so while I'm usually like a big time forward thinker in that way, we admittedly are like, as you just mentioned, actually, like, it's like we're thinking creatively, like now that energy is going towards an event that, you know, we have our turkey trot coming up this year on Thanksgiving morning. You know, a lot of those sort of creative dreaming thoughts are about making sure those events go really well within this current sort of climate. So making them hybrid, making virtual options available as well as in-person options, those kinds of different things. And what do they look like? To answer your question directly though, one of the dreams that I have that I've always had is to do an outdoor recreation festival of some sort. And so that would be something that would be kind of down the road, would be doing something where we bring together a lot of different types of outdoor recreation, everything from like slacklining and yoga to running. Man, my calendar invite wants me to make sure that I keep my story short and I'm not doing a good job. Anyway, outdoor recreation festival is what I would love to do. Bring together a bunch of different types of outdoor recreation and have it be a larger scale, sort of like you think of a music festival, but instead full on celebration of outdoor recreation, along with some sort of celebrity and or sort of professional components where you could actually just come watch and like be entertained, watch BMX bike riders ride on a dirt track, you know, but then at the same time, you know, try out a pump track on a, you know, a demo bike or whatever. So anyway, very diverse range of options. So that's that's on my dream list for in sort of the Harrisburg Rockingham community in the near future.
Yeah, I really like that. It's got a little bit of that CrossFit Games feel to it, where an arena of people are like watching what's happening, except you're creating many more mini events within the big event.
Yeah. And then you also could try something new. Like, I love the idea of people being somewhere where they're like, oh, I could try stand up paddle boarding. I've seen those things at Costco or whatever, you know, like, what does it feel like to use one? And then like, you could try it out at something. And so there'd be a combination of free events and paid events and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I think it could be really cool.
Yeah, I think it could be really cool too. Well, as we wrap up here, can you share with the laughers how they can follow Virginia Momentum on social media, learn more about your events and sign up?
Yeah. So we are on Instagram and Facebook as VA Momentum. So it's just VA as in Virginia and then the word momentum on both of those. And then our website, vamomentum.com, is another great place to find out all the information. And then that's where all of the sign-up pages are for any of the different events. If you go there now, forgive us, as I was telling Dawn earlier, for some of the, there's things that are phasing in and out of virtual versus in-person and which events are going to actually happen versus which ones got canceled. So our website, my dad gives me a hard time about the website.
Dad from
Virginia Beach. I can always count on my dad for some honest feedback. He's like, your website is confusing, son. Like, oh man, sorry, dad.
So, love you, dad.
Yeah. So anyway, no, we're those are the best places to find out and sign up.
Okay, good. Well, thank you, Kevin. This has been wonderful. I'm looking so forward to seeing what's next for your team, our communities, and others, wherever there are Virginia Momentum events.
Thanks for having me. Fun to share the story. And man, I'm appreciative of you inviting me. This was awesome.
Yes, it's been so great. Laughers, be sure to check out Virginia Momentum events. Get energized, active, and plug into something super special. We'll be sure to put their info in the show notes as well. And of course, lastly, and most importantly, laughers, thanks for tuning in. Out of all the podcasts out there, you picked us, and we think that's pretty darn special, just like you. Until next time, keep smiling. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by X2 Comedy. We'll be dropping a new podcast every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, so check back for another uplifting episode. Come to an X2 Comedy show or let us bring a show to you. To find out more, head to x2comedy.com. Be sure to share us with a friend. Until next time, cheers.